Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about the third and final preseason game of the Chicago Bears. A little baseball here and there. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow at family-friendly, affordable prices. Sure, the season's not going on right now, but it will be starting in less than 2 months. So make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, sign up for season tickets and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, glad to hear that you're feeling a little better. We missed you last week and we had the total snafu. I recorded the whole podcast and I realized that it didn't set to the microphone. It set to the computer audio. So ooh. So everything sounded ooh. Like I was like 4 feet away. And so I had to re-record the whole podcast. It sucked.
That's rough. That is absolutely rough because you don't want the podcast sounding like that. Even the slightest like difference in audio where it's not hooked up to the microphone. You don't want that.
And then I was a panicky Pete is when I was getting ready to upload it. I was like, wait, why is there no sound? It says it's playing. Oh my God. Is it not record again? I'm like, that's it, done. And then I realized that my computer audio was on not mute, but like the lowest volume. I couldn't hear it. So I was like, oh, okay. Whew. Thank goodness, man. I was like, I can't have two major snafus in one sitting.
Yeah, you would have been throwing that laptop out the window and you would have run it over with your car a few times and you would have gone crazy, obviously.
Yeah, just been super petty. So did you get a chance to watch the third preseason game of the Bears against the Cleveland Browns?
I did, and I could say that might have been the most I've ever enjoyed watching a preseason football game, especially the first half, especially when Justin Fields was in there. I mean, the second half was whatever, you know, most of the starters were out, it was depth, whatever, but that first half was so fun on both sides of the ball. I mean, obviously the focus was what Justin Fields was doing, what Luke Getsy was doing with the offense. Seeing Cole Kmet catch a few catches, you know, he had a touchdown and he had a nice, first down play. But I also really enjoyed watching the defense too. I mean, it was fun to watch on both sides of the ball and it was great. I had a great day of football on Saturday. I saw the Illini win a big game and then I saw the Bears play a nice preseason game.
Yeah. The Illini won, Northwestern won. And the Bears won. So it was a good Illinois football day, but, I didn't know what to expect in this game. At first we didn't even know if Justin Fields was going to play, were they just going to sit him out? And then we heard during the week, oh, hey, the starters are probably going to play the first half or so. And I'm like, okay. And I heard a lot of people start saying, you know, oh, that's silly because you run the risk of her getting guys hurt. And honestly, I think having guys sit out and then go into a game in 3 weeks or whatever is going to get guys hurt more than them playing a half of football. And then, going from start, stop. Plus you can't be continuously worried about injuries. Injuries happen. There's no way to stop it. You know,
they happen in practice all the time.
They happen in practice. They happen in games, preseason, regular season. They happen. You can't control it. You can't wrap these guys in bubble wrap. They're professional athletes.
I mean, remember the Matt Nagy era, how much we grilled them for not playing the starters. Remember 2019?
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of brushed it off when it happened in 2019, and then we realized, hey, you know what? Maybe they should have been practicing.
Yeah, so I was all for it. We still didn't see the full gamut of players.
Roquan.
No.
Brisker is obviously hurt.
Yes. No Robert Quinn. You didn't see Byron Pringle because he's injured. You didn't see Velus Jones because he's injured.
Darnell Mooney didn't play.
Yeah, I don't think he's played. Or if he did, he played a couple snaps. I don't remember seeing him though.
No, neither do I.
Yeah, so there was a lot of guys that you didn't see play, and so I'm gonna start this off by what I say every preseason game is: don't get too high with the highs, don't get too lows with the lows on preseason, because people get too caught up on, well, this happened, we can extrapolate to here, or, well, you know, we can't extrapolate because this was first team versus second team, or second team versus third team, or, you know, what I'm excited about is we saw play calling that was to Justin Fields' strengths. Mm-hmm. Justin Fields looked like he understood the offense, had good command of it. Guys were open. He made the throws. And that was the most important part. Justin Fields is easily the most important player on this team. And for him to go out there and look as good as he did, even though you have crusty old Mike Martz and ding dong Louis Riddick and, you know, Dan Orlovsky, and all these national people saying, oh, there he's going to suck because the Bears suck. And I think Saturday sort of made all of them have to start considering eating their words.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I just go out and say, let the results speak for themselves. And you look at what Justin Fields did on Saturday. I mean, there was more than just him making the throws. It was about how the whole offense functioned as a unit. If there is one thing that I am excited about this offense is I think Luke Getsy is a really smart coordinator. And I think you're going to see very structurally sound offense, even if the offense isn't even that great, because you don't lack a lot of, you know, you don't have the personnel around Justin Fields that you would ideally have if you're trying to win a Super Bowl. But if you make things work, then you can build a functioning unit, and then you can build off that. If you know that Justin Fields can do the things that he can do, that he could read the offense, that he could command it, like you said, that you're able to play to his strengths, rolling out, doing some RPOs, then that's something great to build on. It is something that you need to establish this year. That is honestly priority number one, is establishing a rhythm with the offense and establishing how Justin Fields works with that offense and Luke Getsy and how it all comes together. What I loved seeing on Saturday with Justin Fields himself was not only was he making some nice throws rolling out, but you saw him make some nice throws dropping back too.
Yep, absolutely. And here's the thing, the offense, we saw the first drive looked bad. And
yeah, and I'm like, shades of last year in Cleveland. Yep,
I think everybody had the same thoughts of what happened in Cleveland last year. And you know, I got a little nervous, but then every other drive looked really good. And I'm excited about this offense. But the thing is to remember is this is far from a finished product. Is the offensive line is while they're a lot better than they were, they're still learning to work with each other. I mean, Tevin Jenkins is going in, what, nine days into being a guard?
Yeah.
So the communication isn't there. Plus, you still don't have your starting center in there. So you have a lot of gelling to do. They're still having a little bit of struggle running the ball. That's going to improve. You're going to have better receivers in there once you have Byron Pringle and Velus Jones, Darnell Mooney out there. And then you're going to have more creative play calling and the full offense in there. I think this offense is going to be okay. And there's going to be growing pains and we're going to hit speed bumps along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of the speed bumps are going to be Justin Fields having the time to throw the football.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's going to be sequences where the opposing defense is all over him in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, we see that. And you know, that first drive, a lot of it was communication issues.
Mm-hmm.
You saw Sam Mustafa miss a block and he should have gone to the second level and gotten the linebacker, and that linebacker didn't get picked up and caused the running back to get tackled for a loss. That was on Sam Mustafa. And then there was another one where it was Larry Borum's guy, and I think he thought, and Tevin Jenkins helped him out because Tevin Jenkins' man dropped into coverage. So he was helping, and then he shoved him and let him go to do something else. And I think Borum thought he was going to keep the coverage or keep the block, and they kind of let him go. And that blew up the play. So there's just some communication issues, I think, that are going to get worked out. And I'm sure those are getting called upon in the film study of, hey, this is what happened here. But you saw a lot of that get cleaned up as the game went on. But, you know, blitzing is going to be a struggle with this team for a little bit because, like I said, young players, Braxton Jones, Larry Borum, Tevin Jenkins, all young players, and it's a whole new offensive line. It's going to take a little bit of time. And as Tom Thayer said, you know, offensive lines take rhythm, continuity, and time to gel. And that's what we're going to need to see is them building over the season.
Yeah. And you know, what was really nice that I saw last night, when you saw some of that collapsing, when you saw the blitz coming, is you saw them execute on a screenplay on one of those where they were able to get the ball and get positive yards. They executed very well on that type of play. And that was so good to see, because I feel like my whole football watching life, every team in the world could execute a screen but the Bears. If they can actually execute screens, and you're able to do that when the blitz is coming and you're having trouble and you're still able to get positive yards, boy, what a difference that's going to make.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a huge, huge issue with Matt Nagy, is he didn't call screens, and the offensive line was so porous that you were letting your quarterback get killed. And there was no screens in place to try to slow down the pass rush.
Well, you mean that curl route wasn't going to save it?
No.
Wow, that's mind blowing.
It was frustrating to watch, and we're already seeing the fact that Luke Getsy is calling screenplays and letting the league know, hey, we're gonna beat you. We're gonna beat you if you if you try to blitz or you're getting pass rush in, we're gonna take advantage. And you know, that is going to slow the pass rush, period, is just the threat of it.
Exactly. You know what else too, that I thought was really nice last night, was seeing Dave Montgomery in there and kind of reminding you, hey, this guy might not be a top tier running back, but boy, his shiftiness and able to bounce off guys really kind of gives you some hope for being a run first offense.
Absolutely. And I remember when I scouted him and coming out of college, and I actually had him in the mock draft, I was like, this guy is going to be a pretty darn good running back in the next level. He does not go down at first contact. He just doesn't. And you see that in the NFL. He just doesn't, even if he's not gaining yards, like a lot of yards after the first contact, he's not going down. It takes multiple guys to bring him down. And once you give him a little bit of lane, he doesn't have home run speed, but he's got a nice burst. Like you saw it on that big run he had that, some running backs would have just taken that corner and taken it home. And he knew he couldn't do that. So he just initiated contact, hoping to get a few more yards. But, he's shifty, he's elusive, he's got good vision, and he's tough to bring down. And that's a pretty darn good running back. I think he was a good pickup.
Yeah, and I think you need him to be healthy all 17 games too. I mean, that's just crucial. You know, you could say things about Khalil Herbert, who, you know, I like as a certain down back, but, you know, Monty's clearly your number one guy and the one you're giving to the football more than anyone else on the ground. And, you know, just important for this offense. And I think that him getting the playing time that he did was perfect. You didn't try to do too much with him in a preseason game, but you did enough where you're kind of like, hey, this is what he can do. Remember that. Look at him, you know, slide and shift a little bit and look at how he bounces off. It was just nice to see again. It very aesthetically pleasing to the eye, the football watching eye. I hope that going into this season and throughout this season that we can keep all our backs healthy, because we know what Ryan Poles' philosophy is, beating you in the trenches, and you need your running backs to do that. And I think that they got a pretty nice core here.
Yeah, I like the running back group they have. But if Montgomery gets hurt, I like it a whole lot less.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He stays healthy, any of the other ones can go down with an injury and I'm still fine. They're all good complementary backs. I think you need David Montgomery to be pretty healthy most of the season, if not all the season.
Exactly. I mean, you can't rely on Khalil Herbert being your number one. He's a good complementary guy, like you said, but no disrespect to him. He's not the swifty, shifty guy that's going to be a number one running back for you. He's more of a guy that's going to power forward.
Yeah. I mean, we saw some nice things from him when Montgomery was hurt those couple games last year with the knee issue, but there's 0% chance that everybody being healthy, he's going to beat out David Montgomery.
Right. And
that's not a knock. Just, I think David Montgomery is a pretty darn good back in this league. Another thing that I was happy about, the Bears didn't get killed in penalties. The penalties this whole preseason is a huge shift from the Matt Nagy era.
This is honestly, I think, my biggest takeaway from this preseason is how disciplined they've played. Do you remember the game against the Seahawks? The Seahawks were getting flagged left and right, and the Bears weren't.
Yeah, I think the Bears only had other than if you take away that awful pass interference, I think they had two penalties for 10 yards.
Yeah, yeah. Cleveland sure as hell had a lot more than the Bears when it mattered.
I think they had double the number of penalties.
Yeah, I mean, this whole preseason, even the first game against the Chiefs, I don't think the Chiefs committed a lot of penalties, but the Bears didn't either. I mean, all three games consistently. And that is what gives me some hope with this coaching staff, is disciplined football, football.
Right, is the Bears don't have a big, it's the NFL. Anybody can win any Sunday. It doesn't matter what team you are, we saw with a pretty darn good Colts team last year, just needed to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars to make the playoffs, and they couldn't do it. So, I mean, any given Sunday, but the Bears don't have a huge margin of error to be able to win games.
No, they don't.
I think their defense, like their front seven is okay. And I think the safeties are good, but they're so thin at cornerback. But they play tough. They play hard nosed. They don't commit penalties.
They get up very quick. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about them.
Same with the offenses. There's going to be a lot of growing pains. It's a brand new offense, a second year quarterback. We don't have a ton of depth at wide receiver, and but they don't put themselves in holes. And I actually tweeted out that there was the penalty on the tight end for holding in the first, I think it was the first quarter. And I tweeted, I was like, you know, in the regular season, I would be super mad about this because it was a blatant hold. But in preseason, I don't mind this at all because it gives the Bears the opportunity to work on a situation where they're put in a hole. And in previous years under Nagy, it would have been done. The drive would have been killed and they would have had to either punt or settle on a field goal attempt. The Bears didn't. They overcame the penalty. They didn't commit any more penalties. They got the first down, ended up scoring a touchdown. And the guy who made the hold caught the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked that. It gave them an opportunity in a meaningless game to work through that, to work through what it's like to be in a hole. Under Nagy, we saw so many offensive penalties for not, you know, people not knowing where they're supposed to be, illegal formations, delay of games, delay of games after timeouts. It was a cluster.
Encroachments.
We're seeing smart, disciplined football, and that gives the Bears a better opportunity to win because you're not hurting yourself. The special teams have been solid. The defense has been solid. The offense has been, fingers crossed, fairly productive. And we're not committing penalties. That makes it harder to beat. You actually have to beat us. We don't beat ourselves.
Right. And like you said, very little margin for error. You know there's going to be a lot of close games. At least you think there will be. And you know that the Bears, the scheme could be really good, but if you don't have the talent, that's only going to get you so far. So if you want to win games or stay in games, you can't be making dumb penalties. I think the biggest thing for me, looking at the discipline of this team, is that if they're not doing that, then they're clearly focused. I mean, that says a lot to me. And it's sad that we have to take that as a win, but you look at how the Bears have played the past few years, well, then you kind of need to take those as victories, unfortunately. I think there's a lot of optimism for this Bears staff to at least have this team, even if it's not very good, at least structurally sound. I mean, that's, if you have a team that's structurally sound, you can build off that. There's a big difference.
Right. And another thing that was a takeaway is, what is Justin Fields' mental strength? Because going into that stadium, it was not that long ago when he got killed there. Mm-hmm. How did he handle going back there to play? And he showed no fear. Ended up being 14 of 16 for 156 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and 146.9 quarterback rating. So clearly that didn't faze him. He blocked that out and went out and played. And that's huge. That's huge for the growth of the player and his confidence in this offense. And I love seeing it.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said about that. I mean, what, 9 sacks in that game last year? There's a lot of emotion there. I mean, that's his home, you know? And then the last time he was there, that happened. Then I think that says a lot. I really do.
The last thing I have on my notes to take away from the offense is last year there was a late hit out of bounds on Justin Fields, and Tevin Jenkins was the only player that defended him, and his offensive line teammates held him back and or yelled at him for defending Justin Fields. And what happened Saturday when Justin Fields got a late hit?
You had guys coming in to defend him.
Yep. That is not going to fly. And that means a lot. That shows that they got their quarterbacks back, that they're going to be mean and nasty. And I love seeing it. I love seeing it. I don't like seeing Justin Fields get hit because that was a cheap ass shot. And it pissed me off how late the flag was to come in.
I know. I mean, I thought it wasn't going to get called.
Yeah. I was like, how is that not a flag? And then finally it came out, but I don't understand. Is Justin Fields does not get those calls. It's not like he faked slide, or ambiguously slid. Like, he gave himself up clear as day, and he keeps getting popped. And that is, and you know what? If they don't call that, people are going to keep doing it.
Right. I mean, it took what? 4 or 5 seconds for that flag to come in.
Yeah. Like,
that's a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I bet a ref had to see the replay to be like, oh, I guess I got to throw that. It was terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even see the flag come in. I just heard the announcer say, oh, well, now the flag comes in, and then you see the flag on the score bug, but like, I didn't actually see it get thrown.
Yeah, so it was annoying and frustrating. Is I get if it's a close play, him not getting it because he's a young player. Okay, I can sort of buy that, but
when these
ones that are not getting called are just egregious. That's the second time in the preseason that he's gotten popped, and the first one didn't get a call, and the second one was a late flag. So it's frustrating. And if I'm Ding Dong George, I'm reaching out to Roger Goodell and getting him on the horn and being like, what the hell? That's our franchise quarterback. Get better.
I thought you were going to say him run out on the field and try to defend. You got him in his khaki pants, his nice shoes, and his polo shirt just running out there.
It's going to be like when Don Zimmer tried to fight Pedro Martinez.
He just decked.
Somebody's just going to grab Ding Dong George by his head and fling him to the ground.
Hey, I'll give him credit for defending his quarterback's honor.
Oh, man. But other side of the ball on defense, I saw a lot of good things. I mean, even without Robert Quinn, I think that they were able to get to the quarterback a little bit. You didn't see a lot of big plays. The tackling was good. It was
so that the interception should have been two interceptions, but.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw Kendall Vildor being well placed on the field.
Yeah. I mean,
he was in good position.
He looked good.
If this scheme can make Kendall Vildor into a, you know, solid, respectable secondary player, then I'm all for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was very happy with the defense. And I get it's going to, the offense is going to look totally different when you have their starting wide receivers in, and when the molester is back at quarterback, it's going to look different. But also, the Bears didn't have all their starters in, and this is a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. Like, the Browns are legitimately one of the better teams in the NFL.
Ah, they'll win four games.
Okay. If you have the quarterback that doesn't get suspended, they're one of the better teams in the NFL, the Browns, versus you don't think so?
Nah, the Browns will always be the Browns to me. Even when you have an elite pass rusher and when you have some talent in there, they'll always fuck it up.
I mean, they made the playoffs last year.
Wasn't that 2 years ago?
That was last year.
You sure?
2021 NFL playoffs.
Because they did beat Pittsburgh the one time, but
yeah. Oh, wait, what is this? Hold on.
I thought that was 2020 they made the playoffs. So they beat Pittsburgh and then they lost to the Chiefs.
Let's see. You're right. It was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, no disrespect to Jacoby Brissett. I just have a trouble thinking that he's going to lead you to enough wins to be in a playoff hunt.
I mean, we don't know that Jacoby Brissett is going to be the starting quarterback week one. Well, he will be, but we don't know if he's going to be the starting quarterback all the first, 11 weeks.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy Garoppolo is going to get released Tuesday.
Could you imagine the Browns in one season, they get Deshaun Watson and Jimmy Garoppolo and they still end up being the Browns?
That would be funny.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I have to imagine that the 49ers are going to roll with Trey Lance. I mean, yeah, haven't they made that, haven't they declared that? Or
They have declared that, and yeah. they've been trying to trade Jimmy Garoppolo, but here's the thing is if he's on the roster on Tuesday, they got to pay him.
Right.
And teams,
it's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yes. It's like $26 million.
Yeah, it's a chunk of change.
So, I mean, and it's clear that I think they thought that they got close enough that somebody would be desperate and trade for him. Even if it wasn't very much capital, they would be better than nothing. But the Seahawks are just like, nah, we're going to roll with garbage.
Drew Locke going to be their quarterback or Geno Smith?
I read Geno Smith.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't realize until this year that Geno Smith was even still in the league.
And Jacoby Brissett looks 400 years old. Did you see him when he took his helmet off?
Yeah. And I like Jacoby Brissett, but Jacoby Brissett, in my opinion, is like the ideal, like spot start, backup type of guy. He's just rolling for over half a season. I don't know. I wouldn't want to rely on that.
I mean, on paper, the Browns should be good. They've got good wide receivers. They've got a good offensive line. They've got a good defensive line.
But they're the Browns.
Then they decided to trade their starting or get rid of their starting quarterback and sign a guy that they knew was going to be suspended for most of, if not the whole season.
Because they're the Browns.
And I don't want to get too deep into this, but why in the world is it a bigger penalty to bet $1,500 on the NFL, but then it is to sexually assault
molest women? Gee, women. I wish I had an answer for that.
Like,
defies logic.
It defies all logic. And then Roger Goodell is just like, you know, gambling is a long-standing no-no in the league. Shouldn't assaulting women be a longer standing rule?
How many NFL, how many outlets is the NFL partnered with? I mean, look how big football gambling is, DraftKings and all that stuff. Like, I just, you have Drew Brees and NFL faces doing commercials for betting outlets. Yeah.
If gambling's such a no-no, don't take their money. Don't associate with them.
Oh, gambling. We don't like gambling. As he reaches behind and gets his wad of cash from DraftKings, the DraftKings hand hands it to him.
He's holding behind his back two like cartoon bags of money that have the dollar sign on it. It says gambling on it.
And I don't know exactly, you know, I haven't really looked into it. I don't know exactly how it works with, you know, NFL gambling and partnerships or whatever, but like, come on, when one of the all-time faces of the NFL is Drew Brees and you're doing gambling commercials, come on.
Yeah, it's silly. But all right, but on paper, the Browns, regardless of applying them being the Browns to it, on paper, they're a really good football team. And the Bears, the same media that are anointing them are also saying the Bears are historically a bad team. So, you know, being able to play with them gives a lot of credence to this season being much better than a lot of people are expecting.
You know, I just want to see the Bears play decently just to quiet some of that stuff. Because look, I completely empathize with those who aren't high on the Bears' playoff chances. I'm not either, but I mean, you have people out there saying they're only going to win 3-4 games. It's like, dude, we might not be good, but how come you're not putting that energy towards like the Seahawks? Have you seen how bad that team looks, like that we just talked about?
They're bad. They're bad.
And it's good for them too. They could tank this year, then get their quarterback.
Yeah. It's, but I mean, look at it. Is last year you had a rookie quarterback, a bad offensive scheme, a bad offensive line, an undisciplined team, and a harder schedule. And what did you win last year? Six games.
Should have won 7 or 8. Honestly, you blew that game against the Ravens. You remember that one?
Yeah. So you're saying that with an offensive line that looks like it's going to be better. I'm still not saying it's where it needs to be, but it looks like it's going to be better. The better offensive system, a more disciplined team, and that same quarterback now having a better offensive system and a year under his belt is going to win and an easier schedule is going to win half as many games. That just doesn't make sense to me. You know, if you tell me the Bears are going to draft 12th. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
I'm not going to argue with you. That's probably fair. Like I keep saying this is when I'm arguing against what people are saying. This is not a spectrum it's a spectrum. It's not, oh, hey, if I say they're not going to be the worst team in the league, I think they're going to win the Super Bowl. There's a whole wide range in between there, and they're going to be somewhere in there. You know, they're probably going to win 6 to 8 games. And I think that's fair. And maybe they surprise us, or maybe there's a bad injury and things go sour. But I would much, if I had to put money on it and somebody said they're not going to win between 6 and 8 games, you know, Marty McFly comes back from the future and says, no, they're definitely not winning between 6 and 8 games, and you've got to bet on it, I'm going to bet the over before I bet the under. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but I'm also trying to be somewhat realistic here. Clink, 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 clink. I'm trying to be somewhat realistic here as I get that they're not going to be the Buccaneers. They're not going to be the Chiefs, but they're not going to be the Seahawks, and they're not going to be the Jaguars.
I think the Jets are going to be pretty bad too.
The Jets are going to be terrible. The Giants are going to be terrible.
The Giants aren't going to be good, but I do think they're going to be better. I do think so. The Jets, I think, are going to be awful, but the Giants, maybe they're not as bad. But, you know, we'll see. You know, I look at the division itself. I mean, just looking at the NFC North, we know Green Bay is going to win it. I mean, I'd be shocked if they didn't. And I think the Vikings will be good enough to stick around. I just don't know if they're going to be well above 500. I kind of see them as an 8-9 win team right now. They have talent on their team. It's just, you know, how much can they win with? You know, they obviously have a great wide receiver in Justin Jefferson. You got a really nice running back. And, you know, Kirk Cousins can at least give you some really good games. But, you know, they're going to be a competitive team. I don't think they're going to be a great team. The Lions are going to be better than I think last year, but you know, they still need their quarterback, and I think they still need some more defense, but I do think they are going to be better, more aggressive. I see the Lions as like a maybe a 5-6 win team right now.
All right, I'm going to throw a number out there, and it's going to be of Packer wins, and you're going to say over or under. Packers 11 wins.
It's pretty much right where I have them. I have them at like 11 wins.
11-6?
Yeah.
I think that's fair. So I think they're going to be a couple games worse. I could even see them going 10-7, to be honest with you, if they don't get the wide receiver situation fixed. But I see them probably 11-win team. The Vikings probably an 8 or 9 win team. The Bears, mm-hmm. 6 to 8 win team, and the Lions probably a 5 or 6 win team.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, this is not going to be the terrible division this year.
No, and I think what I would like to see, I'm not counting on it. I'm really not. But just win one game against Green Bay.
Oh, I know.
Just win one. You know, pull a... I don't think you're quite as bad as you were in this season, but if you could pull a 2015 Thanksgiving like upset on them, that would be really, really nice.
NFC South. Does anybody outside of Tampa Bay have a chance at a winning record?
Falcons are going to be dookie.
Panthers are going to be dookie.
Yeah. I mean, didn't Sam Darnold get hurt too?
He did, but he lost. They said he lost the battle anyway. Like Baker Mayfield's going to be their starting quarterback.
Which is, that makes sense. So I keep forgetting he's part of that now.
I don't think the Saints are going to be good.
I don't think they're going to be terrible either.
I think the Cardinals are going to be the surprise team that looks bad this year.
Yeah, you know, the thing with the Cardinals is I like Kyler Murray. I think there's talent there, but it just, we've seen the Cardinals win some big games at like mid-season over the past few years, and then it just kind of fades away, and they either don't make the playoffs, a la 2020 that, you know, helped us get in. And you saw last year, just an absolute non-performance in the playoffs.
Seahawks are going to be dreadful.
Yeah, that's not
good. I think the Rams run away with that division. NFC East is going to be interesting.
I think the Eagles are going to be better than people think.
I think so too. I think the Cowboys are still going to be pretty solid.
I think they're going to be mediocre.
They're not going to be 12-5 like they were last year, but
no, they'll be competitive, but I think they're going to be like 9-8.
I think they're going to be at least a double digit win team.
I think maybe 10. I don't know. I just don't buy them.
Commanders. I don't think they're going to be good.
No, that's not going to be very good.
You got Carson Wentz at quarterback, and your stud pass rusher is probably going to miss the first 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I don't think the situation in Washington is very good right now.
And the Giants, I think, are worse. I don't think the Giants are very good.
They're not very good. I think they will play a little better than some people expect. But yeah, I certainly don't want to make it sound like I think they're going to be good. I mean, here's the thing. The NFC really isn't that good.
No, they're very, very top heavy. I mean, the Rams and the Buccaneers are very, very good.
And Rams, Buccaneers, Packers are your top three.
And Akeem Hicks looks good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were to predict the top five right now, who would you say?
Top five in the NFC?
NFC, or? Yes.
I would say Tampa Bay 1, Rams 2. Packers 3, Eagles 4, Cowboys 5.
I would probably go Rams 1 just for the sake of them being the defending champs. I don't think they're necessarily going to be the best team in the NFC this year, but, you know, I think the champs get the benefit of the doubt. 2, I'm going to go Green Bay. 3, I'm going to go Tampa Bay. Here's my thing with Tampa Bay. I can't help but wonder. I know we say this every year and it never actually happens, but I don't know. I have that feeling that Tom Brady's age is going to start to show, especially after retiring and missing some of camp. I'm not saying he's going to be bad, but I could see him taking a step back this year.
I don't know. He played Saturday and looked real good.
I know. Every time I doubt Tom Brady, he does. I know. But
I've learned from my mistakes is that I'm not going to doubt Tom Brady until there's absolutely proof to doubt it or reason to doubt him. And I don't have it.
Hell, he could be 50 and he'll still probably be better than most quarterbacks in the league.
I mean, probably.
I mean, he's what, 44?
Yeah.
It's unreal.
I mean, I'm like a year older than him and I feel achy and old, and I had my block party like the other week and somebody was like, oh, hey, want to throw the football? And I went to throw the football and I thought my shoulder popped out of the socket. And I was like, I am more impressed by Tom Brady now because just age catches up with you. You know,
his work ethic is unreal. I mean, it really is.
I mean, anybody that can not eat strawberries for 25 years because they cause inflammation in your body and he can't have that during the season is an Iron Man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say.
Like if somebody that's tasted a strawberry and said, I'm going to not eat those and they're not human.
It's hard. I love strawberry. I love strawberries. I love strawberry flavored soda. Have you ever had strawberry flavored soda?
I have. Strawberry jelly is forever the king of jellies.
I just picture you after a bad Bears loss sobbing and just eating a thing of strawberry jelly.
No, I'm just sitting there like Bubba Gump talking about all the things you can make out of strawberry. Strawberry jelly, strawberry ice cream, strawberry pie, strawberry gumbo,
strawberry shortcake, strawberry soda, strawberry lemonade.
Oh man.
Strawberry sandwiches.
Strawberry milkshakes.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. But yeah, I mean, but we'll see with Tom Brady. I mean, I keep telling myself, stop doubting him. He'll always prove you wrong. But I'm going to say Tampa Bay 3-4. I'm conflicted on this one. I want to say the 49ers, but Trey Lance has a lot to prove, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there was enough negative publicity whispers about him last year because I think they'd hoped that he would win out last year, and he didn't. And he looked good in the preseason. I don't know if I can totally trust him to say that the 49ers are going to be that good.
Right, I think with me, it's less about Trey Lance and more just the 49ers system. I mean, look what they did last year with Jimmy Garoppolo as your quarterback. You got within a few minutes of the Super Bowl.
Also, they've already got some injuries on the table.
They do.
They're going to start off the season 0-1.
Oh boy, here we go.
Clink, 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 clink.
Clink, 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 clink. But then five.
Here, here's the sound that I'm making with the Kool-Aid stirring it. Clink, 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 clink.
Oh no.
Clink, 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 clink.
We have reached peak Kool-Aid. You can't go any more than that. You just can't.
I'm drinking so much strawberry Kool-Aid that I look like the Joker.
Oh God. Strawberry Kool-Aid is now the official Kool-Aid of Swirsky Sports.
But you know, the last thing I want to say about the Bears is I kind of was looking over and making my final 53 man roster, and quarterbacks set Fields, Trevor Siemian, and I don't think they carry a third. Maybe they bring somebody on the practice squad, probably somebody on the practice squad. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's not Nathan Peterman, if it's, if they didn't the Packers get rid of, was it Benkert, their third string quarterback? I wouldn't be surprised if they pick him up because he knows the system.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd probably rather have somebody that knows the system really well, you know, to come in there and be that third string quarterback, because you're not going to get any reps. But I think your 53 is, you got two quarterbacks. Running back, I mean, David Montgomery, Khalil Herbert making the team, Kari Blossomgame making the team. I think because he was a draft pick, that Tristan Ebner is going to make the team.
I think so too.
And I have them carrying another running back. I have Darrington Evans that makes it because he got a lot of carries in there over Ebner, and he's a veteran. I think they probably trust him more in blocking, picking up blitzes, because that's a big thing for backup running backs is how they pick up the blitz. And Ebner didn't do so well against Seattle with that. And he's a good special teams player. So mm-hmm. I think they sneak him in there. Wide receiver. I don't have any comfort level at all in this. Is Mooney, St. Brown, Velus Jones Jr., Byron Pringle. Those four make it.
Yep. Yep.
But the question is, we won't know until this week, how bad is Byron Pringle's injury?
Mm-hmm.
And the way the NFL rule is if you put somebody on injured list to start the season and don't put them on your 53-man roster, they can't come back to play. So if you expect them to play in the season, they have to make your 53-man roster. Then you can immediately put them on injured reserve and then get that spot back. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him. Cause so the 53-man roster cut down is Tuesday, and the first official time the Bears have to give an injury report is Wednesday. So we don't know how bad the quad injury is. But I would be surprised if he doesn't make the squad. So it leaves you with two likely spots left over. And you've got N'Keal Harry, Dante Pettis, Tajae Sharp, Isaiah Coulter, Simba Webster, who all have, well, not N'Keal Harry, but everybody else has done something to warrant them making the roster.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think N'Keal Harry will make the roster, and then they'll move him to the injured list.
Mm-hmm.
Give themselves two spots. And I would not be surprised if the Bears comb the waiver wire and they pick somebody up that was a free agent.
I could see it, sure.
But what I put is Mooney, Equanimee St. Brown, Velus Jones Jr., Byron Pringle, N'Keal Harry, Dante Pettis, Sharp, Coulter, and Simba Webster don't make it. And it was tough. The Simba Webster he's a good special teamer. I still don't think that he makes this team.
Pettis Webster are kind of the one I'm going back and forth at kind of for that final spot. But yeah, I think Pettis has earned it, in my opinion.
Yeah, because he can return punts and he played better as wide receiver.
It's too bad Daz Newsome didn't work out, but we saw way too many drops and we saw some special teams muffs, and it wasn't surprising when he was cut, unfortunately. And I hope he could go somewhere else and tack on because I like him. But yeah, it just didn't work out.
Daz Newsome's going to catch on somewhere.
Yeah.
He needs to work on being more consistent. He's just too inconsistent. The talent was there, just way too inconsistent.
Yes. Right.
Tight end, I think they carry three: Komet, Griffin, and O'Shaughnessy. Mm-hmm. But I think both Chase Allen and Jake Tongis both make the practice squad. I think both of those guys have shown some good things, but not nearly enough to be on the squad.
I miss my man, Jesper Horsted.
offensive line, I think they only carry nine. I think that they think that the backups they have are... Last year, the backups were very specific to a spot. I think you're going to see more diversity in ability to play multiple positions with the backups. So you're going to have your Braxton Jones, Cody Whitehair, Lucas Patrick, Tevin Jenkins, Larry Borum being your starting five. And your four backups, Sam Mustafa, Riley Reiff, Michael Schofield, and Tyre Carter. And don't be surprised if the first couple games that Lucas Patrick plays guard and Cody Whitehair plays center. Because that Lucas Patrick injury is on his thumb, is on his snapping hand. If it's not 100%, I think they put a club on it and kick him over to guard and move Cody Whitehair to center for a bit to make sure that they have their five best offensive linemen out there. They've multiple coaches and Ryan Poles have said that their plan is to have their five best offensive linemen out there. And Lucas Patrick is much, much better than Sam Mustafa. And having Lucas Patrick out there playing guard is, and Whitehair playing center is better than having Whitehair at guard and Mustafa at center.
Yeah.
But I fully expect them to pursue wide receivers that get cut. And there's some serious names that are rumored to be on the bubble. Denzel Mims, Breshad Perriman, Darius Slayton. I'm even hearing Sammy Watkins might get cut by the Packers. Traquan Smith from New Orleans, Jalen Reagor from Philadelphia. So there might be some names that get cut at wide receiver. So don't be surprised if you see against what the 53-man roster looks like week one, it looks a lot different than it does Tuesday. On defensive end, I have Robert Quinn, Travis Gibson, Al-Kadeen Muhammad, Mario Edwards, and Dominique Robinson. I don't think that's too wild. Defensive line, Justin Jones, Karis Tonga, Angelo Blackson. I have them, Micah Dew-Treadway and Trevon Coley making the roster. Linebacker, I was tossed up here. Roquan Smith, Nicholas Morrow, and Joe Thomas make the roster, but I have them carrying five, and I have Jack Sanborn and Caleb Johnson making it. Cornerback was tough because of injuries. And Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, Kendall Vildor, your top three. I have them carrying five cornerbacks. And I put Greg Stroman and Duke Shelley, but again, that's another position where cornerback, they might scouring the waiver wire, and some guys that are on the rumor to be cut, Eli Apple, Anthony Brown, Mike Hughes, Jojuan Williams, and Lonnie Johnson. So I would be shocked if they're not scouring the waiver wire for cornerbacks. And then safety, I have them carrying five. I don't think they're going to try to put Elijah Hicks on the practice squad. I think they would worry about losing him. So Eddie Jackson, Jaquan Brisker, DeAndre Houston Carson, Dane Cruikshank, and Elijah Hicks are your safeties. And then Santos, Scales, and Trenton Gill are your specials. So it'll be interesting to see. There's some positions where I'm really curious what the 53-man roster looks like and how.
Yeah, I can't wait to break it down when it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the linebacker is going to be interesting. The defensive line, how they view the offensive line. I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest with you, if they're scouring the waiver wire for offensive linemen to upgrade over Michael Schofield. They clearly are not a fan of him.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. So, it's going to be exciting. Football is here and we are like 2 weeks away from the first game of the season.
Hard to believe, man. Really is.
Should we talk a little baseball?
Why don't we?
I'm tired of baseball right now. Like the Cubs were doing okay. And you were like, okay, I like the momentum here. And then the Cardinals just come in and break my spirit.
I mean, here's the thing. I'll say this. I'm just looking at the individual performances at this point. I like seeing Nico Hoerner hit. I like seeing Nick Madrigal hit a lot better. You know, I like seeing Ian Happ continue to hit. I like seeing our starting pitching overall. Justin Steele has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Justin Steele is the poster child that makes me excited to see what happens with the pitch lab.
Exactly. And I mean, you have all these prospects in the minors right now, the pitching prospects you're keeping an eye on, the top hitting prospects. Pico Armstrong is a stud. I think there's a real reason to say, hey, you know what? We might have something here going forward. I mean, let's look at the last two series. There have been several games where the Cubs were in the game and then things kind of got out of control. Well, look, you traded away your top relievers. And you have just dudes filling in right now. Yeah. For the long run, it doesn't really matter.
We expected that. We expected games to get out of hand late.
They held up pretty good for a while, and now it's kind of starting to.
Well, we're getting in the dog days, and you know you've got to have guys come through sometimes.
They've also played a lot of baseball.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying is at some point the wear and tear, double headers in there. You've got wear and tear on players from a long season and somebody just has to step up and they just don't have the horses on the back end to step up.
Right. And I think it's another thing too, to look at some of these other players, like Wilson Contreras. He's clearly hurting from that that injury he had in the Field of Dreams game.
Uh-huh.
He's not 100%. If you put him on the 10-day DL, I wouldn't really be opposed to that, frankly. You could tell. I think Seiya Suzuki, after a pretty lengthy stretch of awfulness, has been swinging better lately. Even when he's not making the best contact, he'll either find a hole. And when he's making good contact, you know, sometimes he flies out or sometimes he lines out, but sometimes he gets a hit. But you're seeing more confidence, I think, in him. And he was going to go through an adjustment period anyway. So you hope he could just keep building off of that. So like I said, for me, it's all about the individual performances. And overall, since the All-Star break, they've overall played much, much better. as a whole. And look, the Cardinals are a really good team.
They, you know? They are. And you know, one thing I saw, I think it was The Athletic, and they were saying that, you know, the Cubs right now are playing to entice free agents for next season, for the off season, you know, proving that they're not a bottom feeder team. And while I agree that's probably true from the front office standpoint, players aren't playing that way. Players are playing tough the whole time, but from a front office perspective, yeah, sure, because it's a lot harder to, you know, lure a free agent there if they expect to be playing on a bottom feeder team versus a winning team. So if they can finish strong, it makes it the sell a lot easier when you've got Carlos Correa coming in and you're trying to pitch him, you know, hey, look, we've got this future team. Look what we're going to look like. Look how we finished the season. You know, it was I get what they were saying, but I just don't see the players playing that way. It's not like the players are looking at it as, you know, oh, hey, look, let's play tough so we get, you know, free agents to come here.
And I think they're playing with a lot of energy right now. I mean, I think there's a good culture established there. So I think that's another good thing that you can kind of entice people with.
Right. I just hope that they can continue playing well till the end of the season. If they can hold off losing 90 plus games, that's going to look good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm remaining optimistic that there's good times ahead for the Cubs in the coming years. I think that you're seeing enough promise from some of the young kids. I mean, I think the two best stories right now this season overall have been Nico Hoerner and Justin Steele.
I would agree. But question, mm-hmm. The Cubs are on pace to lose 92 games this year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they can play well enough to not hit 90 losses?
I think they're going to hit 90 losses. And I do think you're going to see a lot of games kind of like today where even when you don't win, you battle back when you're down. I think they're going to play some close games, but I mean, listen, you got a hodgepodge in the bullpen at this point. I think you're going to see a number of games where the Cubs are going to take a 2-3, 4-0 lead. And then the pitching late is just going to, you know, let it go. It's kind of how I see it. But like I said, I look at the quality of the games over the results. And I think that with the personnel you have now, the results of the games are not going to look as good as what you see on the field. So yeah, I think they lose 92, 93 games at this point.
It's a bummer. It would be nice if they could hold it to 88, 89 losses, especially since they were on pace at one point to lose like 100 games.
Sure.
I think that would be a big victory.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree.
But yeah, this was just a tough week. You know, especially it started off that stupid Cardinals series that Smiley gave you an amazing start and you couldn't eke out a win.
Oh, I know, the 1-0 loss on the Pujols home run. That's the one game that you want back. Like if you could have won that game, you would have won 3 out of 5. The 2 blowout losses, man, it happens. But you know, yeah, that was the one frustrating game because you won 2 pretty nice games. You won a game 2-0 where you shut them down, and you won another game where the offense did a lot and they were able to, you know, keep to it. And that, you know, that was obviously fun to watch. You know, the other 2 losses were blowouts. So, you know, again, that's going to happen. And the one blowout was unfortunately during the Pat Foley broadcast, who was awesome, by the way.
Yeah. That, the game. That was awesome to hear. I'm so glad he got the opportunity to do that.
Me too. It made me say, you know what? Invite him back anytime. You know, if Boog needs to do something, some international broad or some national broadcast, whatever, you need someone to come in, Bring up Pat Foley. I'd love to see him call a game again.
Yeah, it was cool to see, and I'm glad he got to do it. And
let him fill in for Pat when Pat needs some days off.
Pat for Pat.
I'm worried, man. I'm worried that Pat Hughes is going to announce he's going to retire soon. I'm worried. I don't want Pat to leave. Hall of Famer Pat.
I agree. I have nothing bad about the TV broadcasters, but I really like Pat and Ron.
I love Pat so much.
And I like Coomer is good with Pat, but if Coomer is the one that has to carry that broadcast, it's going to go down pretty quick.
Yeah, like Coomdog is so great with Pat Hughes. The chemistry they have is great. And you know what? They took a few years to build that chemistry, but they eventually did it, and they did it very well. But without Pat, it's just it's not the same.
Yeah, it's tough. So I'm hoping that's correct, that we don't see him retire anytime soon, because it would be a tough transition. Because
he's not old, but he's getting up there.
And you know, he does take time off, which is
never
a good sign.
I wonder if we're gonna maybe he doesn't fully retire, but there might be that day where he's like, you know, I'm not gonna go to the West Coast or the East Coast. I'm gonna do all the home games and the road games within division.
You know, pull the hawk.
Yeah. Well, didn't Harry Carey do that too, where he just did home games towards the end?
He did some weird schedule. I mean, I guess, you know, everybody that they last long enough starts to do that, because, you know,
traveling's tough.
Traveling is, it's one thing if it's NFL, because it's once a week,
right?
And it's a much easier schedule. Traveling for baseball is real tough, and you get double headers, and that's a long day of calling baseball. You know, so I get it. I really get it. And didn't Hawk only do road trips and not do the home games?
Yeah, because didn't Hawk live in Indiana? So like the commute to the ballpark was kind of far.
Yeah, he lives in like South Bend.
Right.
And so it was like, that's like an hour and a half.
God, man, doing that every day. Wow.
Yeah. So I hope beyond hope there that that's the case. Unless they brought in Pat.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but it's tough. It's tough to develop a good rapport with somebody. It takes some time. You know, it's not luck. It takes effort and work.
Absolutely. And now we see Pat go to the Cubs Hall of Fame, and I love the fact that he was put into the Hall of Fame on air. It just made me feel so many good things.
Yeah, and the way they did it, you know, he got to read the card, and that, it was cool. It was a cool cool moment. And you know, now that you say that, it makes me start to think like maybe is towards the end of his run. That's tough thing to think about, especially when we're going through a huge transition with the Blackhawks and their announcers.
Well, you know, at least they hired Sharp and Troy Murray for TV. That was like the first good decision they've made on anything in a while.
It is. It's just, that's a big change, is to go from a duo that we know and love and loved for so long to completely different, you know, group. And I think this season is going to be real tough to listen to.
Oh, I know. I mean, not having Pat Foley and Ed Zoe is a huge, huge, huge loss.
Yeah. And, but complete, I mean, if you lost one, not the other, you know, one could carry them along and limp along a little bit, but having
both.
Yeah. It's a tough pill to swallow. I'm not excited about it. You know, we saw how bad those broadcasts can be for the Blackhawks this season.
And I mean, it really sucks when the team is going to be just awful.
Yeah, the team's going to be terrible. And, you know, and then you got a brand new announcers. So, have they said what the split's going to be between Troy and Patrick Sharp?
I haven't really looked, honestly.
I just saw that it's going to be both of those guys with Vosters as the play-by-play guy.
Right. And I think Vosters can do a really nice job. I think he's a good announcer. It's just when you replace a legend like Pat Foley, that's a hard transition to make.
It's a hard transition, and you got to get the buy-in. And to get the buy-in, you've got to put in the time. I mean, like I think Boog Shambi's pretty good, but has he won over Cubs fans yet?
I don't know. I mean, I don't mind them, but I know others who haven't really been won over yet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think he's fine. I think he's, I mean, you know, of the choices, I think they did a pretty good job, but it's just that buy-in takes a lot. And I think Vosters is walking into a hornet's nest. Fans are mad about how bad the team is going to be. They're mad about, you know, the way the front office and the ownership have dealt with things, and they're mad about the changing of the guard with the announcers. And I think Vosters is going to be he's going to be right in the line of fire for just because he's there.
Well, you know, at least with hockey, it's not nearly on big of a stage here as if it's were like the Bears or the Cubs or the Bulls. So I think you're going to have a very apathetic fan base. That's just, I think they'll have it on as background noise. Honestly, it's kind of how I plan to have it on, is just background noise.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put games on. I mean, I love watching hockey, but I don't expect to watch a lot of third periods.
Yeah, unless they're somehow only down 4 goals.
But White Sox, man.
Oi.
That is a team that Oi. Went from, you know, you called it too, is like, hey, I think they'll do fine against the Astros. It's going to be the other teams that, and boom, there you go. Tough series against Kansas City, tough series against the Orioles, and then getting their asses kicked by Arizona
at home.
Like, it's
this it's, past week has been as dark as it gets.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. You know, and you've seen Michael Kopech gets hurt.
Yet they leave him in there.
Yeah.
To face how many batters when he was clearly not well?
Dylan Cease got lit up against the Orioles. Johnny Cueto got lit up against Arizona. Like, there's just a lot of things that just make you go, hey, we're running out of real estate here for them to make a move.
The defining loss of this whole past week was the game in Baltimore when the final out was in Adam Engel's glove and then it popped out. Then the guy hits a home run and then you lose an extras.
Yep. You took a player out that's hitting the baseball to put in a defensive replacement, and the defensive replacement makes a bad play. And TLR's got to own that. That was his decision. He made that decision. He's got to own it. And I don't think he does.
Robert, who couldn't two hands in there yet today, says, oh, Eloy's legs are sore. We're going to make him make sure he rests today because his legs are sore. Even though I could have shattered the wrist of my best player in Luis Robert by having him try to swing at 100 with essentially one arm.
Yeah, it's real tough right now. The White Sox are 5 games out of first, and they got to leapfrog another team to get there.
You have a month left, and this division is going to keep you in it. But right now, I think even the most optimistic White Sox fans have had enough. And I don't blame them. Look, things can happen in September. We've seen weird things happen in September, but right now you got to call it as it is. And now you're 2 games below 500 on August 28th. And you have a few more weeks to try to get back in this and maybe pull out a playoff spot.
So the Guardians are on pace to win 86 games.
Okay.
In order for the White Sox to match that, they've got to go 23-11 for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, they have no room for error going forward.
They have none. They have absolutely none room for error. And I don't see any way that they do this.
You would need to get hot, and you would also need the Twins and the Guardians to lose a bunch of games. And I mean, it could happen, but you need a lot to go right for you going forward. And I feel like so much air listen, this team's been up and down all year. I mean, they've consistently been around 500. You've had weeks where they look completely defeated and heads down, long faces. Then you've had them go on some winning streaks. I mean, the first 2 games of that Astro series, I thought that was it. Like, this is finally it. That's the turning point. I know we said this a bunch of times this season, but I thought this is it. This is where they take off. And now they're what, 2-9 in their past 11 games since then?
I'm not saying they can't. I mean, 23-11
it's doable if you play better baseball, doable. But you can't play baseball like this.
Yeah, you need the Guardians to stumble at this point, and you need to win. You've got a very, very, very winnable series against Kansas City.
You also had a winnable series against the Diamondbacks, and look what happened.
Yeah, but then after that, you've got a series against the Twins, and if you sweep the Kansas City and you win the series against the Twins, I think you go into second place.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, absolutely. Again, a few days can swing a lot, but you need to do it.
Yeah. And you've got 4 games next month, or 4 games left in the season against Guardians. So, I mean, you know, stranger things have happened. You could sweep all 4 games and make up the vast majority of it. It's nowhere near mathematically impossible. It's just getting darker and darker, the chances.
Every loss makes it harder. Every loss. I mean, worst case scenario, this weekend was getting swept at home. And even I thought, okay, there's no way they get swept at home. And then they did.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think there was a snowball's chance in hell that the White Sox couldn't win at least one of those games this weekend.
Yeah, it's and the, you know, to lose the opener, just getting manhandled.
That set the tone
with the guy who's been pitching probably your second best pitcher right now.
No question, with Cueto. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and and getting just lit up. Bad start. You expect to go in there. Cueto's pitching against at home against Arizona. You pencil that in as a win, and it's a blowout loss. Here's the series that the White Sox have left in the season: Kansas City, Twins. So three against Kansas City, three against the Twins, three against Seattle, one, two, three, four against Oakland, two against Colorado, one at Cleveland, three at Detroit, three at home versus Cleveland, three at home versus Detroit, three against or at Minnesota, and three at San Diego, and then wrap it up with three at home versus Minnesota.
Not exactly dealing with murderer's row on that schedule. So
no, honestly, the Mariners are the only ones that I'm just, that's a real tough series. The other ones you theoretically should be able to win. Like, you know, if, but you're starting to get to the point where you can't lose a series. You got to win them.
No. Right.
I guess right. Padres and Mariners, tough matchups, but
Padres are tail spinning too.
But yeah, they are. Man. So the Padres are 11 games over 500 and they're almost 20 games out of first place.
Yeah.
It's the Rockies are 34 and a half games out of first place.
Oof.
The Nationals are 38 and a half games out of first place. It's wild. But as far as the wild card, where are the White Sox at the wild card?
I mean, they have to win the division, right?
I think so. Because
too many teams in that mix.
Well, I mean, they would have to leapfrog. So right now the wild card is Tampa, Mariners, and the Blue Jays. And then ahead of them, looking in, but ahead of the White Sox are Baltimore and Minnesota. But Cleveland has a worse record than the last wild card team. So I think you would need to win that division. But you're five games out of first in your division and six games out of the wild card.
Yeah, there's too much to leapfrog, I think, with the wild card.
And it's funny, in the National League, the last wild card spot is a battle between two teams that are just dive bombing. It is right now it's San Diego's, but the only other team I think that has a possibility of getting it, Milwaukee.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
It is going to be a tankathon to get that last wild card spot, and nobody else can catch them because the next team is the Giants and they're seven and a half out.
They're not good.
And they're seven and a half out and they're worse. So, so I think we know what the NL wild card looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know what really stuck out to me? I heard a stat today, a White Sox stat.
What?
Not one player has hit more than four home runs in a single month on the White Sox. Not one.
Well, I think I thought I heard a stat and I haven't confirmed it, but during that, the last X number of games that Albert Pujols has more home runs than the White Sox during like the last 3 weeks.
I mean, I'd believe it.
I mean, I know you're cherry picking a really good month or really good stretch for Albert Pujols, but
the Sox were supposed to be mashers. That's the thing. All they do is hit opposite field singles because their hitting coach said, fuck the home run.
You need I really think we keep going back in the league between making contact and small ball type plays and mashing it. And I think the real true correct philosophy is somewhere in the middle with guys that aren't mashers hit singles, guys that are mashers hit home runs.
Yes.
And balance your lineup with all kinds of hitters, because, you know, if you have guys that are all off speed pitchers or hitters, then if you go in there against fireball pitchers, you get mowed down. If you got all guys that hit fastballs and you have a junk ball pitcher, you're going to look like garbage. Like, have a balanced lineup that you can go out there and make tweaks in depending on the pitcher. And the blame for the White Sox runs so deep. It is ownership for not ponying up the money. It's Rick Hahn for failing last year was failing to shore up holes that were potential. And this year for doing the same thing and running back out mostly the same team, Tony La Russa for just being a bonehead, and the players for not executing. If you were the White Sox and, you know, would have been nice to pony up the money and sign a Kyle Schwarber. Can you imagine having a 40 home run left-handed power hitter in this lineup?
Hell, give him a Jock Peterson even.
To be a fly on the wall to see
buzz, buzz, buzz,
buzz, buzz, buzz. Like what is Rick Hahn saying behind closed doors with the microphones off is he blaming other people? Is he saying like, you know, hey, I'm handcuffed here, I'm doing what I can with all kinds of restrictions? Or is he, you know, is he really just screwing the pooch? Because we looked at Rick Hahn as, man, this guy is a genius. And the way he handled tearing down and rebuilding was so good.
Yeah, the initial teardown to set off the rebuild, it was great.
And then and you're like, okay, is this a Billy Bean situation where he's making do and doing the best he can with what he has? Or is it an ownership is not giving him what he needs? Or is this, you know, Rick Hahn is a one-trick pony and he's good at tearing down and making trades, but he can't develop talent and he can't sign free agents?
Well, you know, I think it all goes around. It all goes around top to bottom. You know, he found Johnny Cueto, which ended up being very good. Dallas Keuchel was a complete bust of a signing.
But let me, Johnny Cueto, was that luck or skill?
I mean, they brought Johnny Cueto in just to have a body in there.
Yeah. So I think they were like, hey, this is a guy that had a pedigree and, you know, I think you can sell Jerry on, hey, look at this guy. Like he likes guys that he's heard of before. And you're like, can we have a couple million dollars to sign Johnny Cueto? He's like, I heard of Johnny Cueto. Okay. And he turned out that he found that extra gear. Or did he see something in him that was like, hey, listen, I think he's got something left. I don't know.
Truthfully, I think they just needed somebody.
Yeah.
And he turned out as better than anyone could have expected. I was sure wrong when I saw they were like, oh God, he's going to throw like 5-6 games. He's going to be DFA'd. But no, he's been much better than that. It's a flawed roster to begin with.
Absolutely.
It's frustrating because we thought there was still enough talent on this roster to carry them easily to the playoffs in that awful division. And frankly, I think they did too. And that was a mistake. They just assumed that running back, basically the same team this year, oh, we'll win that division. No problem. We'll figure it out from there. Well, you dug yourself a hole and you have 1 month to get out of it.
Yep.
And you can't make any meaningful moves for the postseason because even if you get some guys, they won't be eligible for the postseason to pass the trade deadline.
So it's is what it is. And you're dealing with issues that you didn't fix earlier. And it's called comeuppance. And, you know, I guess we all are talking, can the White Sox make the playoffs? But maybe the question should be is, in the long run, is it better if they don't make the playoffs? Because if they squeak into the playoffs, do you think they have a snowball's chance in hell of winning a World Series?
You know, while I try to stick by the philosophy, anything can happen, I think their chances would be pretty low.
I know baseball is a little bit of somebody catches fire, but
you can't play like this all season and expect to win one.
The way the playoffs have been the last several years is those top teams throw out those aces every single night.
Yep.
And it's real tough to score runs. And I don't see a path for the White Sox to win a World Series, even if they make it in. And I was buying high on them going into the season, and it's a bummer for me to say, but I mean, like, look at the teams that are just look at Yankees and Houston. I don't see them winning a series against them, but then you've got Seattle and Tampa and Toronto. Those are heavy hitters.
They are.
You know, and you're struggling to beat Baltimore. Baltimore is way ahead. Baltimore was a laughing stock. They're actually a pretty darn good team this year.
They're exciting.
And they're going to be a team to reckon with in a couple of years, because they're 7 games above 500. And if you look at the top 50 minor leaguers, the Orioles have like 4 in the top 50, and they're coming soon. They're going to have money to spend in free agency. That team is going to be, I'm here for it. After that team just got, you know, the poop kicked out of them for years, I'm here for the Orioles to come back and win that division.
I mean, I would love the Orioles to have a bright future and do things. I really, really have always liked Baltimore, and I want to see them succeed.
I mean, how sucky is that, that you're 7 games over 500 and you're in fourth place in your division in 10 and a half games out of first place?
Yeah, that's tough. I bet they're wishing they were in the AL Central.
Oh, I know. They would be a half game out of first.
Mm-hmm.
And guaranteed they would beat the Guardians. Guaranteed that they would win that division. But that's baseball.
Yep. That's sports.
Yep.
That's sports. I just wonder what these next few weeks are going to be like. I mean, they've played with the emotions of their fans so many times. Wouldn't it just feel natural for them to win like 5 or 6 in a row now and get within like a half a game of first, and then they lose another few big games here and it's just more teasing? Doesn't that just feel on par with the course?
I mean, it really does.
I mean, I think Sox fans at this point just want to be done with it. Like, if you're not going to win, then just don't win.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think a lot of White Sox fans have probably just moved on. They're like, Bears are back. You know what? I'm done. I'm really done.
Yeah. And I mean, heck, like we said before, let's say they made the playoffs, like a la 2020 Bears, they fell in and you didn't go anywhere. That would just give justification for Jerry and Rick to say, hey, we made the playoffs. We were injured, but we still made the playoffs. Next year, we'll just be healthier.
And here's the thing is fans are not stupid.
They have sell the team signs, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, that was, I mean, funny as a fan, but that's brutal, man. Behind home plate, sell the team. And I bet Jerry doesn't even know. I bet I will put $50 down that Jerry does not know that that sign was there.
Yeah, I don't know.
I bet Jerry and Tony don't know. Rick Hahn 100% knows.
Oh, he knows.
He knows. And he probably made the sign.
You see him with a giant like marker just helping scratch in the other fans making the sign, going incognito with like sunglasses and a hat
and a fake mustache.
Yep.
Not even a good one. It's like one of those ones you get from like the Halloween store that has just like glue and felt.
He keeps tapping his stash to keep it on his face.
The sweat is making it fall, and it's like half sticking off and half sticking on, and he's pursing his lips to try to keep it on. No, I'm not Rick Hahn. I'm Hick Ron.
Yeehaw.
But you look at the schedule and you're like, this is a pretty like perfect schedule to catch up. It's just, do you have it in you? And you had Johnny Cueto call. And I honestly think that there's internal strife going on, because you had Johnny Cueto calling out teammates. And then this week you had Jose Abreu calling out teammates saying that they need to play with fire. And clearly teammates are thinking that they're not playing hard. And if that's the case, that's a real tough pill to swallow. The fact that you're not playing hard and you're still mathematically able to win this division.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? You're two games under 500 on August 28th and being only five games back.
Yeah. I mean, this is working out where the fact that you're still in this with that bad of a record, that you are still have a shot to win the division is mind-boggling, and you're not thanking the baseball gods every night by busting your ass.
You are given an opportunity like no other, and so far you haven't taken advantage of it. Can they do it in the last month? We'll see. But every game you lose, again, it makes things a lot harder. It makes that hole deeper that you have to dig out of.
Let's see, so the probability, the mathematical probabilities have the White Sox best case scenario 86-76. And
best case scenario,
yes, based on mathematical probabilities, is they have the White Sox going between 76 and 86 wins, and best being 86 wins, and has them with a 13.7% chance to make the postseason.
You said 26?
No, they have a 13.7% chance to win or to make the playoffs.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I misheard you.
Yeah, they have 13.7%.
13.7. Okay, sorry.
and whereas the Orioles have a 53.8%. So you are on par. Oof. There's nobody on par with you. NL is funny. It's Mets, Braves, Phillies are 98% plus. Cardinals are 99% plus. The Dodgers are 99.9%. And then it leaves you with the Brewers with a 34% chance of making the playoffs.
Wow.
So it is. And then the Padres are 66%. So it is White Sox. White Sox are really hanging by on with a thread here.
Yeah.
And the same predictions is the worst case scenario for the Guardians is finishing with 82 wins.
So basically 500.
Yeah.
Game above.
So it's.
Or you know, two games above.
The White Sox essentially need the Guardians to start stinking it up and them kicking ass.
Yep.
Fingers crossed. I'm not making any more predictions, but man, the White Sox, if they ever needed a fire lit under their ass, it's right now.
But man, do we really want to save Tony's job?
No. But his winning or losing doesn't change his chances of coming back. That's the sad part.
Well, I mean, okay, let's say they don't make the playoffs this year. Do you think it's possible that Jerry just says, hey, you can work in the up here in the luxury box now by sitting with me every day and yucking it up?
Maybe. I mean, when was the last time anybody heard Jerry talk?
I couldn't tell you.
Do we know what shape he's in? Is he kind of like, is he like coherent?
I think he's coherent. I mean, the fact that they all met and they, I mean, he made the decision to bring in Tony La Russa.
Right.
And, you know, clearly coherent enough to call Tony La Russa and hire him.
I mean, but like you listen to Tony La Russa, he's not really all that coherent.
No, no.
Is Jerry better or worse than that?
Who knows? Who knows?
I don't know.
He talked pretty well in The Last Dance a few years ago, but that was also a few years ago.
True. And we don't know when that interview took place.
It's 2019.
But I mean, we know when the show came out, but yeah, so I'm guessing maybe 2019, but that's,
yeah,
we're coming towards the latter half of 2022. So, I mean, a lot can change in 3 years with somebody his age. I mean, the guy is what? 87.
He's old.
He's old. Speaking of old, there was one thing I wanted to address is, I don't know if you saw, the Bears blog made a post on Twitter about Virginia McCaskey not doing very well.
Yeah, haven't they been saying that for months now?
Well, I mean, somebody said it that she wasn't doing well. And then somebody posted that she did have a scare and that she had turned a corner.
Gotcha.
But I mean, the way he wrote, he basically wrote a eulogy almost.
Right, right. I don't know.
I give a lot of shit to her, but you know,
she's one tough cookie.
Yeah. I mean, she seems like an actual good person.
Oh, just, yeah.
Like I don't have any ill will towards her as a human being.
No, neither do I.
I just kind of want her to sell the team. But I don't want her to die. I don't want her to die.
No.
You know, it's one of those things that people say enough. I mean, eventually they're going to be right because we all know what the eventual outcome is going to be, whether that's tomorrow or 5 years from now.
Right.
It's going to be the same. You know, we don't need a crystal ball to know what the end of everyone's story is. You know, but she's got a lot less real estate to work with than most. You know, I was trying to explain to my daughter, I was like, you know how rare it is for somebody to make it to be 100 years old? And she's about to hit it. You know, she's got like 3 more months and then she's going to be 100 years old.
Yeah, she is a century on this planet.
I mean, Betty White looked like she was going to make that tap dancing and suddenly, boom, Betty White's gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, so at some point, Virginia's not going to be with us. And, you know, I hope nobody takes cheap shots at that point.
Right. No, I'm with you there. Absolutely.
Is, you know, it's fine to take cheap shots with somebody's alive and can defend themselves. And, but I, you know, if the reports are true and she is having health issues, leave the lady alone.
Agreed.
Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe, whether you listen to iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media, Facebook, at Swirsky Sports, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, Twitter at ShyFanPat2 or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you all so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...